let's talk about iOS 13.5. It's now available. They Apple released the GM version for developers and the public beta version for testers on Monday. And on Wednesday, Apple released the final version for everyone in the public. And this is the build that, this is the version of iOS that includes the, what was once called as a feature, contact tracing. Now it's called exposure notification, which is the API that developers, well, not just any developer, but that health developers can build an app for their state or country or region, to assist in contact tracing with COVID-19 and contain the spread of that. So,
So recap that.
Yeah.
So it's only, it doesn't actually use your location. It only is listening out for, like, basically all of your phones act as a Bluetooth beacon and they go back and forth. It registers devices that have been nearby using anonymous hashed identifiers that aren't directly corresponding to any particular person. It's just your device knows your own identifier. And then, so over like the week, your device can build up, oh, okay, it knows I was near this other device for 10 minutes. I'll remember that. I was near this other device for 5 minutes. I'll remember that. I was in range of this one. And obviously it's not a perfect system because you could technically be in range through a wall where you wouldn't actually be exposed to the virus. But, you know, this is the Bluetooth system that they're working on. It's short-range Bluetooth, so there shouldn't be too many false positives in that regard. And so it can get a reasonable map of devices that you've been near, which, you know, proxies for people. And then if someone contracts the panda, the virus, they can then go onto one of these health apps, sign up, register, and say, and report their condition, and the condition will supposedly be verified by the medical institution somehow. You probably have to get doctors sign off on it, right? Because that prevents abuse, because it could be very easy just to annoy everyone. If it was just a free-for-all, it would only take like three people to say, oh, I've got it, when they don't, and then nobody would listen to the notifications anymore because they'd be just pointless, right? So they have to get verification, and then when the app reports to the Apple server or the Google server that this identifier is reporting as positive, then it can send a notification out through the app to all phones that have been in proximity of that identifier, and then you can know that you should probably be isolating for the time being, or, you know, to get tested because you've been in close proximity to someone who's since got the virus in the last, you know, week or so.
Yeah, so I was on, there was sort of a briefing on this today, and so, and there's been multiple of these, and so every time it's because there's some change to the way that it will work before it's released, and now it's actually available. And some of the changes this week were that the public health agencies can define what does it mean to have an exposure event, so they can define, you know, if it's this instance of time or if it's longer than some other one. So it's you know, it's to get them to be on board with this, I think that was necessary. And then they can know how many exposure events a person had, which was missing before. Now that's quantified. And so these are some things that are different from before, but that seems to be that the agencies that are wanting to work with this wanted to have.
Yeah, because it's fair to say that while Apple and Google have been getting along, there have been much tension in actually getting countries, states, regions actually on board with this system, because there are people who don't want anything at all because they see it as an invasion of privacy, which is interesting. Like I saw someone who blogged, like, the exposure notification API is like the straw that breaks the camel's back into freeform, you know, tracking of individuals. Well, for a start, the exposure notification API, you know, doesn't actually have any connection to your actual location. And one of Apple's rules and Google's rules about a partner making an app is that then the app's not allowed to collect location information or, you know, telephone contact information or anything. It has to be anonymous. And if you actually think logically for 1 second, you know, there's a direct GPS tracking tool inside all of your phones already. It's called Find My iPhone, right? Like, so if you're worried about that kind of stuff, it exists in your phone today, and you can go into the settings and turn Find My iPhone off. You could, you know, if you're going to be that paranoid about it, who's to say that toggle actually does anything and Apple at any time can get your location when it wants to, right? Like, so if you have concerns on that basis, then you should already not be using an iPhone because it's too late already, right? Because those features are just inherent to the operating system. They're already there for, you know, very convenient reasons, that if you lose your devices, it can help find them again. And you just have to trust that the platform provider isn't abusing that power and just, you know, finding people's locations willy-nilly. So that's the one thing. And then the other part of this equation is the countries or the regions or the states that actually want to collect more data than what the Apple and Google system allows for, because, you know, Apple and Google are coming at this from a very privacy-preserving approach, and they're trying to do the minimum really that they need to get useful data that can actually have an impact on, you know, contact tracing ultimately. But countries, a lot of countries want to be able to get stuff like actual more precise location information. They want to be able to contact people directly and not just being this anonymous system. And so what we've seen over the last, you know, weeks and months is Apple and Google developing, you know, their sanctioned API, which is also better for just things like efficiency and battery life, because it's built into the system, so it gets some privileges that third-party apps don't, and as well as just things like extended access to the Bluetooth stack and, you know, loads of other technical little tidbits like that. But then you've also seen all these other countries trying to, some of them are rolling their own apps and it not working so well, or they're doing it but nothing's really happening with it, and then you're getting all these people saying, we don't want to use the Apple and Google system. And so now is really the crunch time, because finally the Apple and Google API is available for use, for consumption. And so now a state or a country can theoretically release an app that includes the exposure notification API, and it needs iOS 13.5. But if you, and right now, if you just upgrade to iOS 13.5, nothing happens, because this whole thing doesn't do anything until you actually get a compatible app installed. And so here we are today. What app, Zach, from what state is supporting this right now?
Well, so a couple of things. I'll answer your question in a moment. also, to note that it's an update to Google Play services, so Android is also in the mix. Not to mean that that means that this is any more active in the real world, because Apple and Google say a number of states and 22 countries are interested in the exposure notification API. So it's less than a commitment to ship an app. The next step,
the interest from, is very vague.
Yeah, very vague. So it kind of goes. But that's okay. The next thing is, I did ask what number, and there was not an answer to that. So, and then some more folks tried to re-ask the question, didn't really go any well. Get more specific. But, so for the past several hours, I've, contacted either the governor's press secretary or the communications secretary for every health, or both, for all 50 states in the United States, with the exception of North Dakota, because North Dakota, they have a website dedicated to, this is ndresponse.gov, so in North Dakota, their website that's all about COVID-19 exposure notifications and how they're going to use this in their app, their CARE-19 app. And so there's no update from them yet about, you know, this, but they seem to be the, there's no question that North Dakota is like at the front of this in terms of like, where will this update be meaningful? So if you live in the great state of North Dakota, look out for the CARE-19 app if you want to put this feature to use. Apple also highlighted South Carolina and Alabama as committed to this. And so there are apps in progress. And before I'll go through the different street reactions, I had a couple other questions, but one was, is phase two still happening? Because early on in this, we explained on this podcast that there would be a phase one in mid-May and a phase two later in the summer. And phase one would mean that there'd be an app, possibly from the CDC in the U.S. and like and it's NHS in the U.K., right?
Yeah.
And so like the health authority in each state or country would have an app that would work with this feature. And then another, a further in phase two, there'd be some integration in iOS and Android that promotes this more than just you go download the app. It would still require an app to authenticate, but from
So in the phase two segment, what we expect to be the case is that your device will be able to start collecting the device identity information from everyone else automatically, and, you know, show notifications of nearby proximity alerts. But you'd still need the app to actually report yourself as positive, because then that would link directly to the health organization of your local region to get the validation from the doctor or whatever.
That's right.
Currently, nothing happens unless you have a supported app. And at the current time, there are zero supported applications.
Yeah, and it was really unclear. It's like, will there be a phase two based on this? Because phase two is not mentioned at all in the latest round of just trying to inform the press on what's happening here. And the answer was phase two is still happening. Don't know when. It gets more vague because it seems like phase one is more problematic than they'd hoped. And so would states participate? We know North Dakota. And this is just looking at the U.S. And so my big complaint about this is that, it wasn't certain before, but it was – the hope was that there would be the CDC, the Center for Disease Control in the U.S. They would have an app that every American could have on their iPhone or Android phone if they wanted to and participate in this. And so it's one app per country, which is understandable. You know, they can all be localized and made the way that they need to be made to meet local regulations. But instead what happened was it's one app per state in the U.S., and the U.S. is 50 states plus some territories, and then D.C. being the District of Columbia, not a state, just a body of people who live in the U.S. And so it seems to be that there will be one app per state, but will there be? Because I've contacted all states and I have 11 responses back so far. This has been in just the last hour and a half or so. But a number of states, including California, which is where Apple and Google are based, and Texas, which has a similar large population to, it's in the same category as California.
And a huge Apple campus being built there.
True. I've got to put this together in a story, but I've got a tweet thread that is just like, okay, this is what's happening. So I'll go through what I have. Tim Cook had tweeted, technology can help health officials rapidly tell someone they may have been exposed to COVID-19 today. The exposure notification API we created with Google is available to help public health agencies make their COVID-19 apps effective while protecting privacy. And so my response to that was, this is really great. How do you participate? That's the next question. And the update, you read the release, it doesn't answer that question.
Yeah. Right now you physically can't do it.
Yeah, and so the answer I put in my tweet is, download your state's public health authority app for COVID. Which states are participating? Who knows? And we do know that Alabama is one that will participate. South Carolina is one that will participate. And North Dakota is ahead and starting this process. And I asked, is the home of the two companies that built the API participate? And then I heard back from Colorado. They are not considering this. Then I heard back from California. They have no plans yet. Can't rule it out yet, though. Wyoming has made no decision. West Virginia has no plans yet. South Dakota. So North Dakota, they're doing. Yeah, they've got their app. South Dakota will not take advantage of the API because they have their own app that uses location data. So
that's like the UK situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Texas.
By the way, the UK app has been delayed further. Even their app that doesn't use the, the decent API has now hit technical difficulties and is, being delayed. It was meant to be out by now, but it's not.
Yeah. I want to pause here and just say kudos to the teams at Apple and Google who worked on this, because this thing changed rapidly and the first time they disclosed it was like 2 weeks old. So, and they say mid-May, we're at the end of May and it's here. So it's pretty good. Texas, they say that, there is not, this is a quote, is not and will not, Texas is not and will not be using a phone app for contact tracing. So, I don't think there's much wiggle room there. No plans for Ohio, no plans for Delaware. Not a no for Arkansas, but they say that they're currently investigating all innovative strategies for contact tracing. So not a yes either. And they had a really good point in their presentation today that was, before they kind of given the example of somebody going to the park and they meet somebody on a bench or pass by and they're exposed for long enough that's the thing, you don't know who it is. But contact tracing exists beyond the phone stuff. And so they gave the example of like, if you have breakfast with a close friend and you get, COVID-19, then it's easy to remember that you had breakfast with them and to tell them, by the way, you know, maybe you should get tested too. But if you're on a bus full of people, it's pretty anonymous. Yeah. And then back to the park analogy too. So, so maybe Arkansas, Dakota is good. Virginia, they didn't say no. They actually told me that they're holding a press briefing tomorrow on contact tracing. So
possible.
Possible, yeah. Pennsylvania is continuing to determine our next steps as far as contact tracing apps. Okay. So, you know.
Like, I think you can get the picture there that yeah. it probably hasn't gone as well as Apple and Google originally hoped to get, you know, support for it. And ideally, there would just be one app for the entire United States. And, you know, that hasn't happened. So mm-hmm. now we're in this fragmented system where it's state by state. And, you know, only with the exception of those three or four, there's you would kind of hope that more of them would at least be saying we've committed to support this, you know, down the road. I think it'd be unreasonable to expect all these states to have apps ready to go out the door, you know, day and date with the OS release.
Yeah.
But you would hope there'd be more, you know, green lights in terms of, yes, we're working on this and we're going to release it, you know, by June or by July, right? Because obviously, you know, I'm a developer. I understand, like, the implementation cost here, and this stuff you cannot make overnight, and there's a lot of server complexity that all these states have to, you know, fund, develop, test before the stuff can come out. So, you know, 2-3 months delays on actually getting these apps out the door is perfectly understandable. But at this point, it doesn't even feel like most of them even started. They're just, you know, not interested. There's political problems yeah. holding them up. And, you know, that's why it's a bit of a shame, really. And I don't know why, like, the phase two, like, in hindsight, would it have been better for Apple to, like, prioritize what they would have done in phase two earlier? Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. and so you'd get a bigger impact on society sooner. Even if the Apple integrating to the operating system stuff would have taken 4 months instead of 2 months to get the API out the door, at least when it does come out, they can, you know, be assured they're actually making a big impact to every single, you know, Apple user. I think the problem they have there is the part which is the cooperation with the health institutions about validating the reporting. That's mm-hmm. probably why they want to do this first, because then they can piggyback on, you know, the apps that don't exist to provide the, you know, validated reporting, and then just build the notification stuff into the system. But clearly, I think it's pretty obvious that they haven't got the response that they wanted, right?
Yeah, and so a lot of those are kind of maybes, and then there's many, many more I haven't heard back from yet. And I was amazed at how many people responded, you know, so soon. So it could be that, you know, that's a minority representative, but then that we'll hear that the ones that haven't replied, you know, are they're all for it. But I was surprised that California was not one of the states that was like, you know, we've been working with Apple and Google, and we, you know, and the whole 50 different apps approach is tough. Like, I get it. That's the whole thing with the US, is that it's a country, but it's 50 different states. And so, with very different rules in each state, and you know, they tend to be represented differently, and so and that makes sense. But with this, it's too bad that there's not like a sample app that you can just adopt and like investigate and see if it fits your needs, and then you say, okay, yeah. that's this. And maybe there is. I mean, there's a lot of sample code and everything, but
yeah, the bit that's missing, I think, is the server side stuff. Like,
sure.
it's quite the getting the app out the door, which is just a UI to, like, you know, sign up for the API and then say. And send off a form to report is like the easy part. The hard part is the server infrastructure of like saving the identifier, sending a notification. That's the bit where, you know, they're probably struggling technically.
Yeah.
Get it done.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, like, just to air my grievances, I'm annoyed that it isn't a for the US, at least a country approach. I'm sure that there are some political aspects to it. The three states that are so far a yes are led by Republican governors. So that I had a friend who said, you know, this is probably going to be, you know, a thing that's decided by party. So far it's the opposite of that, at least in terms of the response. So, there are, you know, we'll see what New York does. I've got nothing back from New York yet. We know California, which is, led by a Democratic governor, is not decided yet. We'll see what Virginia says. They have a Democratic governor, but so far it's 3-for-3 Republican governors, and then a lot of unknowns, and then many, many, many no's. So.
Yeah, and it should be stressed that, you know, the exposure notification system is not the one thing to rule them all, right? Like,
no.
It's just one element of a very big strategy that everyone needs to get on board with to deal with the pandemic, but it's something that doesn't that Apple and Google have come together with and obviously put a lot of effort into over the last month and a half to actually collaborate and get something unified out the door that, at least from a theoretical perspective, could be very easily distributed to millions and millions of people. You know, even if it's only 1/10 of the overall strategy at defeating the virus, that's a 1/10 times everyone in the world, because by approximation everyone in the world has some form of iOS or Android device, right, of some kind of smartphone, realistically. Like, yes, it's not everyone, but it's a big percentage, and no other schemes that people have come up with will ever have that kind of reach if it's actually realized with partnering applications.
Yeah, I had a lot of questions, and I had to choose one, and luckily it got out there in the beginning, and some reporters kind of repeated it in hopes of an answer. But like some things that I wondered were one was like, when will we see an app? So the answer there is kind of North Dakota looks like to be like leading there. And then, is there any assistance from Apple or Google in developing that? We don't really know. I had a comment, which was, it's too bad that the update to iOS 13.5 doesn't have like a new set of emoji, which we know how that actually goes, is they'll just make them up, but they could do a new an emoji, where they're like, you got to have these three new ones, and that drives adoption way up.
So 13.5, obviously the exposure notification thing is the main thing, but as we talked about before, it does have the tweak to Face ID, which helps if you're wearing a mask, right? So it's just like it can quickly notice that your face is partially obscured,
and that's in the release notes
dialogue.
Yeah,
and that actually helped me. The about a week ago, I was just like resting on the sofa or whatever, drinking tea, and the mug was to my face, and I tried to unlock my phone, and it immediately came out the passcode screen. I was like, wow, that's really useful.
Yeah.
So isn't,
this whole time,
obviously, like the mask is the motivation and the reason why they've done it, but it does crop up in other scenarios. And then the other thing they've done in this update is the FaceTime thing, where you can turn off the automatic zoom in if that's getting in your way for a busy meeting.
This was kind of like the first question, but it was just too optimistic. It's like, based on previous iOS updates, is there any sense of what sort of adoption to expect in the first few weeks for this update? But that immediately became like, doesn't matter, because we acknowledge that this approach, because it has to balance privacy and effectiveness and power and everything else, that it's not the most effective, and that it would rely on adoption of the iOS update or the Google Play Services update alone, and then downloading the app. But then the next thing is that just in the short term, that there's not a next step to it. So we'll see. And then the last thing I was thinking about asking before I got down to my, like, this is what I'm going to ask, is, is there any consideration for the iOS 14 beta? Because oftentimes we'll say like that's finished, and that then a lot of developers and testers will go to that, and it won't have the feature. But these all became like kind of irrelevant, It's like,
yeah, if the apps aren't there,
it was like pointless. Yeah, there's one important question, which states,
Yeah.
So that was
a sad conclusion.
It's the start of things to come. Let's say
and. It would be great if there were apps already available, but at least the infrastructure's there now. So if there are certain waves, or if there is, because I think a lot of people expect social distancing measures to continue well into next year, right? So even if it takes 6 months for some of these countries to get on board and actually do it, at least the stuff's there for it to be done now. So.
Yep. All right. Let's talk about watchOS 6.2.5, which at a high level has the ECG app for electrocardiogram in the country of Saudi Arabia. You also have heart rhythm notifications for irregular heartbeat rhythms in Saudi Arabia now. The big thing is that Apple released a couple of new Apple Watch bands for Pride 2020, retired the sport loop from Pride 2019, and they've got updates to the Pride watch faces, and then they have a new color on other watch faces. So what's going on there?
Yeah, so for the first time, so they started doing the Pride bands in 2016, but that was only for employees, because they had they did the Pride march in San Jose or whatever.
San Francisco, right?
San Francisco. They gave out the watch bands to the employees who were marching, and so that was kind of fun. And then the next year, they actually sold they made those bands available to the public.
And very small variation, but pretty much it was like a woven nylon style band that with rainbow colors.
And so then at the WWDC that year, it was like a big surprise thing where they announced, okay, and we're releasing a WatchOS update next week that will include these cool Pride bands to celebrate, Pride Month, which is generally June, and you can go out and buy the bands. They then followed up on that the year after with a different band, and that also then came along with it a different watch face on the UI, because you could choose between the 2018 style or the 2019 style. And the 2019 one was the Sport Loop, right? Yeah, the Sport Loop.
Sport Loop, yep. Yeah. So instead of being... Yeah. So there was woven nylon, then there was... Which had, like, the buckle. Then there's Sport Loop, which is also nylon, but with, like, the Velcro attachment. And then...
Yeah, and now in 2020, they're doing Sport Band. So the normal rubber band type style, they have done one which is... It's kind of like... They've it's like a rainbow, obviously, right? And,
yes.
But the... They describe it as sort of like pseudo handmade, because each of the five strips are somehow assembled by a human and then it's put in a machine that compresses them together. And so the strips aren't uniform. If you actually look up close, they're like jagged edges. And like the idea is that each one is slightly different and unique. And Apple calls it artful or something to those artfully unique or something along those lines. Personally, I would kind of prefer if the bands were just like straight lines, because you know, if you get a particularly dodgy one, there's just going to be this weird angle in the thing. But that's at least it's different, right, to what they normally do. And then for the first time, they've also done a second band this year in collaboration with Nike, which is their like sport band things. Mm-hmm. And obviously, the Nike ones have the perforated holes around the band, and it's a white band, but the little inlets on each of the holes are the rainbow colors, and that one actually looks really cool.
Yeah. So. They say the Pride Edition Sport Band is assembled by hand from individual strips of colored fluoroelastomer. The strips are then machine die cut and compression molded together. This process results in subtle variations in the wavy rainbow design, making each band artfully unique. I think it's kind of neat, because it's like, for one, it kind of explains to me why they didn't do this before, because it's. I mean, maybe they can. There's a way they can do it where they're all straight. I'm sure there is, but that they didn't.
Come on, Apple's the biggest company in the world. They can make five colors be straight lines on a bit of rubber.
But it isn't that it's that it is separate. It's individual strips of fluoroelastomer, so it isn't just like. Well, I guess it'd have to be anyway. It'd be color, but you know, because they do like tones throughout bands, and you know, like inside outside kind of thing. But it kind of makes it feel more like it, you know, handcrafted, even if it's like it's just like placement, and then there's a lot more machinery involved. I'd love to see a video of this being done. And then when you look at the watch faces that it kind of corresponds to, you know, they have those playful effects where like the things kind of move around, and it kind of reminds me of like the analog version of that digital effect. I ordered the Nike version because it's mostly white, and the colors are like you mentioned, accents within the perforated holes around the band. And it's a really cool style. And the inside, is kind of like a gray color. So you get like a gray inside, and then the very bottom, it's Pride 2020 is how it's labeled. So that's kind of cool. And then, you know, so that's neat. And this seems to be like a really popular one. And so, I do want to get the other one though, just because I've seen pictures and they look neater in person than they do on the website. And
the color palette slightly more, pastel, right? And that's reflected in the watch face as well, because, they're just like a bit more brighter and a bit more like in your face. Right. And the watch faces are cool because they added on the normal Pride face, they've now added the 2020 style. So you get the five strips on analog, and then you get the kind of concentric rectangles on the analog face. But differently to last year, they've made it so that it's seamless edges, rather than before they kind of gave little gaps, pinstripe gaps, which made it look more like the woven nylon style, right? So it matches there. But also what's cool is that they've added rainbow options to several of the other faces.
As a new face color,
So the color style of rainbow on several other faces, including so first I spotted it on the Gradient face, but it's also on Numerals Duo. It's on the Nike faces, which obviously makes sense because they did a Nike band, and it's on California as well. I think that's it. But there's quite a lot of, so there may be one or two others, but quite a lot of different bands, quite a lot of the different faces now. You can get a pretty cool, like funky look just by changing the color star from like a flat color to the rainbow effect.
Yeah.
So I've been rocking the square California one for the last few days in the rainbow style. It's like black background and then rainbow indices. And, you know, that looks really cool. There's you can get circular ones as well. The Nike, unfortunately, the Nike watch face is exclusive to if you've bought the Nike bat, the Nike face, or the Nike watch from the Apple store, obviously. Okay. But the Nike faces all have rainbow options as well. And they look really cool with little like dotted colors and stuff. So I think they've done a really good job of, you know, bringing it all together.
Yeah, the California I like a lot. I've mentioned this on my Watch Time podcast for 95 Mac, that I'd been using the Infograph face with like a white background, and then the complications were all color then because I just needed like a little more color in my life for cheer. And in the California face, you can choose the color, but it's like one color and not color complications. But having the dial be rainbow color, I just it's like, okay, that's what I wanted, that's what I needed, that's really cool. So, and then it goes really well with the band. So I like these. There's been some trouble with getting these to work. I think there were two watchOS releases to try to address
an Apple software release without some bugs.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, so that's too bad, but hopefully you can find these in your release, and the bands are $49 each, so you can purchase those if you're interested in those.
Yeah, generally, if the faces aren't showing up, it seems like you just have to kind of like restart your watches a few times, and eventually pop into life and you can find them.
Yeah, unless you live in Russia where the Pride face and bands are not available, and I presume the rainbow color wouldn't be available either because it's the connection to LGBTQ, which is, you know, a portion of the proceeds from the band sales go to groups that are supporting organizations. And so in Russia, they opt out of having this be available.
Get out of Russia.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, that's cool. And it was, you know, this is about the right time because last year they did them like the 16th of May. And so this was, you know, only a few days after that. But it's nice that they've done more than just one Pride face style, you know, on the watch itself. The rainbows give a nice little like spruce up if you've getting a bit tired of the existing faces.
Yeah. And then California would be one that's only on the series four and five. Yeah. But then with, and then Pride you'd have on either one. On any model with watchOS 6, and then Numerals Duo is also on the older model, so it's the only like new watchOS 6 face that went to the Series 3, and that's a neat one because you can change the style of it to be like full color, top like the hour and solid, and the minute be not just the outline. And then on the or all outline, and then on the Series 5, because you've got the always on display, the rest version of that face where it's not fully lit is the outline. So if you use the full color, then it's like, you know, you've got a, you no longer choose your color. It's like every color. So it's neat.
That's cool.
Yep. So I've got the Nike Sport version, with the white ceramic watch, and it is beautiful. I love it. So it's cool.
We are sponsored this week by Pillow. Getting a good night's sleep is underrated, but with a little help, it can be life-changing. Pillow is an all-in-one sleep tracking solution to help you be more aware of your sleep patterns and discover what might be affecting your sleep quality. If you have an Apple Watch, tracking your sleep is as easy as wearing it to bed. Pillow will track and analyze your sleep automatically. One of Pillow's most loved features is the ability to get a detailed heart rate diagram of every sleep session. You can compare your sleep quality with your weight, steps, caffeine consumption, and many other health metrics to discover how they might be affecting how you sleep. And you can enable recording to save the sounds that you make during sleep. Pillow will pick up things like sleep talking, sleep apnea, snoring, or just other unexpected noises in the night. And a lot of users have been surprised by the results. Of course, Pillow is very privacy-minded. All of your sleep and audio data is encrypted and stored on device. And when you're syncing to iCloud, it's using end-to-end encryption. Pillow doesn't have user accounts, so you can use it anonymously, and it won't collect or send your personal data anywhere else. And if you're working from home, you can take naps using Pillow's power nap modes. Naps help boost your focus, creativity, and overall well-being. And with watchOS 6, Pillow's taking advantage of the extended runtime API to minimize battery consumption when you're waking up with an alarm. Pillow is available on the App Store for iPhone, Apple Watch, and iPad. Discover all of Pillow's features at naybox.com/pillow. That's naybox.com/pillow. Sleep well and stay safe. Our thanks to Pillow for their support of Happy Hour.
Let's talk about the iPhone 12 and what may or may not come in the box.
Yeah, we're talking about the gift that, in this case, doesn't keep on giving.
No.
Because Apple analyst Minchi Kuo was out today with a report that was saying that he believes that Apple may not, and he wasn't definite, he said may not, that was his wording, may not ship the wired ear pods headphones in the box of the iPhone 12. And ever since the original iPhone, Apple has shipped headphones in the box, so you get free headphones. Obviously, from the iPhone 5 in 2012, they changed from the old earbuds to the new AirPod style, which kind of looked like AirPods. And then when they dropped the headphone jack on the iPhone 7, the wired earpods became Lightning earpods. And then a couple of years after that, they dropped the dongle, because if you wanted to use the 3.5 meter to the Lightning dongle, that was there for two generations, and they got rid of that. But this year, Kuo believes that they're going to get rid of another freebie accessory that you get bundled, so you won't get headphones anymore. You just get the iPhone and then USB cable and then the power brick.
Yeah, you seem to care about this, and I don't.
Okay, and, well, I mean...
Yeah. Well, I mean, not the story itself. The story is interesting, but yeah. What's in the box, right?
Yeah. Okay, let me ask you a question. I'll phrase it this way, right? So the Apple TV does not come with a HDMI cable in the box.
No, PlayStations do. Apple TVs don't. It makes no sense.
Do you find it annoying that they don't? Do you think it's stingy?
Because it's essential to use that product. Yeah.
Yeah, because you literally cannot plug in the Apple TV without the cable.
That's right.
So that one annoys you more than the headphones one, because
I'm also annoyed that the Apple Watch Series 3 brand new now doesn't come with a charging puck adapter, just the magnetic charger and the USB. Because it's essential to charging it. They assume you have one already or that you'll buy one separately.
Yeah, that's kind of stupid.
Yeah.
But then on the iPhone, you do get the charge. You're just not going to get that AirPods anymore.
You're not going to get the AirPods, yeah. And I think it's so much more different than the other situations because, there are AirPods, but it's not just AirPods. Like, you know, you can have lots of other headphones that aren't AirPods. I think that the AirPods, in my experience, I've never been able to wear them comfortably. Last week I had family and they were placing phones and they went to the iPhone 7 without a headphone jack for the first time for them. And they were like, okay, I'll use these headphones in the box, but then they didn't fit at all. They were like, these are no good. So they use the adapter and then they use their own headphones. I think that what comes in the box is not great at all and is pretty wasteful in the end. And the fact that it's like, it's Lightning headphones, you know, not a 3.5 millimeter headphones. It's only to be used with the iPhone. You can't even use it with your iPad Pro. You know, if it's got USB-C, you can't use it with your Mac. So it's like an iPhone specific accessory. And it's pretty niche. What comes in the box now? I think it's a lot of waste and filler. I think if you're ordering online, like maybe it would be fair to be like throw it in. You know, I don't know, but
Obviously, this is more psychological than practical, right?
Sure.
What you just said makes perfect sense. And, you know, I'm going to hold my hands up. In my iPhone 12, in my iPhone 11 Pro box right now, is still the headphones in the same packaging. Like, I never unwrapped them. But if they weren't there, I'd have been like, damn, Apple. Be nice. Like,
how did you feel about the adapter not being in the box? That was different because it was like time to move on.
Yeah, I guess with the adapter, I guess if they'd have taken out the headphones and left the adapter, I'd have been annoyed, but because they still had the headphones in there but the adapter's gone, at least you can actually use it with the thing that you brought in. Like, you don't have to make an additional purchase.
Yeah.
Because that is the thing right at the moment, is that if you want to use wired headphones now, you're going to have to use some form of proprietary headphones, right? Like, if you don't want to use wireless headphones, and obviously Apple supports, you know, any Bluetooth headphones, not just AirPods, but if you want to use wired, and people do now, you're going to be forced to buy Lightning headphones, essentially, because who wants to use that $9 dongle?
Well,
so you've either got the Apple option, which is $29, or like Belkin makes some Lightning AirPod, Lightning headphones.
I think
or 40, and that's like your only option. So yeah. It feels kind of punitive. It's kind of like if Apple had stopped including. I mean, I guess chargers are different because you need chargers to actually make the product tight.
And then Nintendo does that with the DS, right?
And I think that's annoying as well. Yeah. Like, that is bad too. Yeah. I guess it's the same difference between like Apple including 5-watt power chargers versus 30-watt power chargers, right? Like,
AirPods don't come with a brick. You've got to charge with your phone or have your own. And the same is true for the Apple TV remote. They come with a lightning cable, but no brick.
Yeah, you're making some good points. It's hard. Like, I guess it is kind of arbitrary, right? What comes with what?
And iPads have never come with headphones ever. iPods always did, which is why iPhones do, because they had the iPod app. And it was like, this is the next iPod. Maybe there's some data on how much stuff gets plugged in too, that it's like, does anyone ever plug something into that port? Do they ever plug in something with a lightning connector into that port that isn't an adapter? Because I would argue that it's probably way more common to use the bad adapter with your preferred pair of headphones because they are preferred for some reason than to use the headphones that come in the box, or to buy the things from Belkin, or Beats has some too.
Use the Apple headphones because they come in the box, right? Like, I feel like when you're walking around, if they're not wireless headphones, they're always like the Apple ones, always. Like, they're so common, and I feel like that is why it wasn't such a problem when they dropped the headphone jack, because they still kept including headphones in the box, so people couldn't get annoyed. It's like, okay, I'll just use these now, right? Like, whereas when they did the 30-pin to lightning transition, people didn't have lightning cables sitting around everywhere. Or the accessory, so everyone got mad. But in the headphones case, it was like, okay, I've got these headphones now, they're in the box, I'll just carry on and use those. Like,
sure.
Obviously, up to now, every iPhone has come with headphones, so when they remove it, people are going to complain, including me, and, you know, we'll whine and moan. But then I guess next year, when the headphones aren't there again, will anybody really care? Like, that's probably the summary of the situation, is that I guess people just move on. The AirPods thing, like... Because one of the other things Quo says in this report...
Question before you go there. It's not your editorial that the headline is, Quo, Apple may not include AirPod headphones and iPhone 12 box to boost AirPod sales. It's not your editorial that's the reason. That's what Quo is positioning, right?
That is what Quo says. He says that Apple wants to sell more AirPods, and they've had a dip in sales, obviously in this quarter because of the pandemic, right?
Sure.
And so he says that removing the built-in headphones will encourage more people to buy AirPods. Plus, Apple may be preparing to do some kind of like bundle or promotion for the AirPods in the run up to the holiday season.
Yeah,
because if we think about the Quo report from a week ago or so, he said there's not going to be any new AirPods revisions hardware wise this year at all. Right, like both AirPods Normal and AirPods Pro are not getting third generation or second generation models until 2021. So you're going to have 18-month-old second-gen AirPods on sale this Christmas, so maybe there's some opportunity there for Apple to push the price down a little bit or do some bundling deals, right? So, and I think it'd be very blatant if suddenly the iPhone 12 comes out and then you can buy it with the AirPods for $50 less or something. Do you know what I mean? And then it's like very clearly, well, you know, you're not getting headphones anymore, but just for a little bit more money, you can get some for free, right? Like, or get some included. So, and the idea of Apple bundling AirPods for extra cost is kind of circulated around for the last few years, right? So maybe this is the year they finally do it. If they're not going to do that, I feel like maybe they could just like bump the AirPods price down a little bit, because it's still $159 at the moment for the base second gen AirPods with a non-wireless charging case.
Like,
the fact that it's now been by this fall, those headphones will have been unchanged for 18 months, closing on 2 years. So if they could just do some minor pricing action there, like $99 would be fantastic, but more realistically, maybe $129, or just the fact that the $159 one now comes with the wireless charging case instead of the wired one. Like, give us something in return, right? Like, if you're going to strip the wired AirPods out, be like, but we love AirPods, and clearly AirPods are very popular, right? But there's a difference between like forcing people to have to buy something and then like offering something better and then people opting to buy it, if you know what I mean.
The sales that I've seen Best Buy do some $20 off. So instead of $160, it's $140, so $139. And that feels better. And the second generation AirPods are not so different from the first generation AirPods. I mean, they got a different chip for like some minor efficiency improvements. They got voice activated Siri, but I think that's okay, because it's kind of like, AirPods were a phenomenal hit because AirPods were really great. And it's hard to match the system stuff that Apple's doing there if you're not the iPhone maker. So I kind of view it as like a thing that, like, if AirPods 1 never changed because there's not this you know, ability even for someone else to do much better, then it's they don't have to change that much. And what we did, what we saw was instead of having a big upgrade, they had a different version of with AirPods Pro with noise cancellation and transparency with in-ear tips. So yeah, we'll see what happens.
Like, I think the second gen AirPods are, you know, very good products that could stay around for years, right? And if Bluetooth wireless stuff was just as cheap as AirPods were, you know, Apple would have bundled them originally, but they're not going to do that. And now that they've become such a phenomenon, they want to keep the, you know, they want to keep the price margin on them, right? Because like
all they have to do is release black.
Did you see that HTC thing this week, by the way?
Yeah. Isn't HTC owned by Google now?
No, I think they sold them.
They sold them away. They were
owned by Google at one point. Oh, okay. They got sold off again. Yeah. There was this FCC filing where HTC are bringing out what looked like a very, very similar to AirPods clones, including a very, very similar charging case. Mm-hmm. And they look nearly identical, apart from they come in black.
And the charger is a USB-C port instead of Lightning, of course. So, which is would be desired for someone like me with a MacBook Pro and iPad Pro with USB-C. So,
Apple did black AirPods, I'd be very happy.
Yeah, I would replace. I already replaced mine whenever they were like half missing, half non-functional. You know, just to get engraving. So I would certainly do it for color. You know, and speaking of color, like if they had colors that matched the iPhone, the phones, then that would be popular too. So we'll see what happens there. I just want to make sure that was because I'm a little bit skeptical of that to sell more thing. I don't know. I think you could debate that.
I'm sure if you like pressed Apple and they'd come up with some like environmental reason that we know that most people just leave them in the box and it just turns into landfill and waste. So I'm just repeating what Quo said there.
Right.
But I think it is true that even if it wasn't the reason for doing it, which it may or may not have been, if you don't include headphones in the box, you are indirectly going to cause more people to buy headphones from you, right? Mm. And you don't have 3.5mm jacks on your phones anymore. So you are, you know, at least encouraging people to get some sort of proprietary wired headphone and then likely push AirPods at the same time because, you know, they love to sell them when you check out, right? So, like, there are indirect consequences there, even if it wasn't like, you know, we just want to make some more money, let's ship them out right now for that purpose.
Yeah.
CleanMyMac X is an all-in-one cleaning and optimizing software solution for your Mac. A single package that combines the most useful features for spring cleaning your computer. You can scan for outdated junk files and easily work out what is using up all your valuable hard drive disk space using the Space Lens tool. It makes a virtual map of how your storage is distributed across all of your files and folders. You can easily declutter caches, old logs, mail attachments you no longer need, and so much more. CleanMyMac X detects it all, and you can potentially save gigabytes of space with a single click. Because, unfortunately, when you remove a Mac program, often it leaves behind little preference files and caches that, you know, your computer is no longer using or needs. And there really isn't a good way to clean that cruft out using built-in operating system features. But that's where CleanMyMac X can come to the rescue. And CleanMyMac X is also designed to be super easy to use. The app will show you step-by-step explanations for every component, so you can be fairly confident in the tweaks that you're making to your computer. And it features a system report menu, a dashboard of stats like free space, CPU load, used RAM, and other essentials. A beautifully designed menu, and it offers a sneak peek at the state of your entire system. Visit macpaw.com/podcast to download CleanMyMac X today and use coupon code HAPPYHOUR to receive 5% off. Upon visiting macpaw.com/podcast, click the Buy Now button and then scroll to the bottom of the screen to enter the code HAPPYHOUR before completing your purchase. CleanMyMac X is also newly available to download in the Mac App Store. Thanks to MacPaw and CleanMyMac X for sponsoring Happy Hour.
All right, let's talk about Apple TV stuff. Apple has, let's see, they've got some new content coming, which was a lot. They had this whole issue of like, they can't make new shows during the pandemic. They worked around that a little bit for like one episode of something. They lucked out and got some new content. And then there's rumors about what they will do to kind of fill the hole there. So what's going on Apple TV Plus at large?
Yeah. So, Mark Gurman from Bloomberg had a nice report this week, that was basically saying that Apple is pursuing and has already bought some catalog content for both that they're courting Hollywood content owners for TV shows and movies that already exist, and they're just getting licensing rights to offer to TV Plus customers. And you know, this is a pretty big deal because up to now, Apple has been very strong on the messaging that Apple TV Plus is about originals only. You know, we're starting from zero with brand new content for you. This is what we're doing. They didn't, you know, bring out the checkbook 2 or 3 years ago and buy one of the big studios or something like what we see, like what we saw Disney do, right? To great success, obviously, because sure. Disney has, you know, Disney Plus is a great service and it has loads of stuff, like 7,500 hours or something of just, you know, endless shows. And a lot of them are from the Disney archive, but they also, you know, brought Fox on board and Hulu and all that sort of stuff is like getting rolled into one.
Not to mention Marvel and Star Wars. And
Yeah, exactly. Like you could endless you know, content there. But they did, you know, they did spend the checkbook on it, right? Like I think total content acquisition for Disney Plus cost them like $100 billion, right? Because $70 billion was buying Fox, right? Mm-hmm. So it's this huge thing. And then you look at like HBO, which is about to launch HBO Max at the end of this month. And they spent $70 billion getting Time Warner and, you know, Conglomerate and AT&T and all this stuff, right? These huge companies spent a lot of money to get big back catalogs. And then you have Apple, which has this big checkbook and lots of money, but they, you know, resolutely did not do that. And they went with this original strategy. And that's what they were doing. Even as recently as the February 26th Apple investor meeting, the shareholders meeting, which, you know, just slotted in before the pandemic happened, so they did actually have investors on site at Apple Park. They asked a question about TV Plus because at that time, HBO just secured the rights for the Friends kind of like reunion show, which is not a remake of Friends. It's just like they're getting the Friends cast together to have like interviews and stuff and like look back on the franchise. And someone asked them, why didn't Apple bid for the Friends reunion? And Tim Cook, you know, repeated the party line and said, that's not what Apple TV Plus is about. We want originals. It wouldn't feel right for Apple to just go out and get a rerun. But now fast forward 2 months later, and all of a sudden Apple's buying old content that is essentially reruns, right? Like it's a bit of a non sequitur. And I think the only reasonable answer is what you said, in that the pandemic has kind of forced their hand, right? It's delaying content production on their original slate. And everyone's stuck at home a lot more than normal, so everyone wants to watch more stuff. So the typical approach that they were going to take with TV Plus, where you can just kind of like, you know, take some time, Apple has enough money to have the patience to sit around and build up their catalog. They've gone from, you know, 8 to 16, now they're up to 30 shows. As we spoke about before, they'll probably top 100 by the end of next year, right? And so that kind of build up is fine, and if you're doing all the originals, then you just have to accept that in your first year, in your first 2 years, your service isn't going to be that appealing because you don't have that much stuff. And that is what it seemed like Apple had accepted. But now they've kind of done like a U-turn and are at least going to have some existing content on the platform. The Bloomberg article says that Apple isn't chasing like huge IPs and the focus is still going to be on originals. But they are getting some stuff, and we don't know exactly what they've bought out yet, and there hasn't been announcements officially yet, so we have to like see exactly, you know, watch, because half the problem is now they're just doing it too late. Like if they wanted to just buy content, they should have done it 3 years ago when stuff was still available. I feel like a lot of the big names now are just already attached to a streaming service, you know, whether it's Netflix, HBO, Disney or whatever else. Like it's already gone off the market, so it'll be interesting to see what stuff they can even get there.
As a person who is, you know, I will probably pay, and I'll definitely pay to see like the next seasons of shows that I enjoy, and then hope that there's more stuff that I continue to enjoy, but now there will be less that can be made for a little while. But from a customer's perspective, it's nothing but good news. It's just like, you're just going to have more to watch, like more, it's going to be a better product than all.
No. Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't want to say it's like the wrong thing to do. It's just weird strategically for them to have, you know, eschewed it for so long, and now all of a sudden they're like, oh, we need some more content. Like, I guess they just didn't predict a global pandemic that would scupper their plans of content demand and content production, which I guess is fair enough. The other thing that was in this Bloomberg report was the claim that in February, the February data, and this was by sources, this wasn't like some analyst prediction, right? This is supposedly Apple's actual numbers. So as of February, TV Plus had 10 million users, 10 million signups, right? So that includes people paying and the free trials. And then about 50% of those were actively using the service. So they were actively watching shows. So you have 5 million active, 10 million total. Obviously, that immediately draws comparisons to like Disney Plus's 50 million number already. And, you know, that launched like 2 weeks after TV Plus. And Netflix added I think Netflix added 16 million new subscribers in the last quarter alone, right? So more than, you know, Apple's total. And I guess some people were like, well, look, clearly TV Plus is a failure if they've only got 10 million. I don't think it's that. I think it's about to be expected, right? In February, they only had 15 shows, right? Yeah. Like, what do you want from a service that has 15 shows and that's it, right? Like, the TV Plus is still so new that in the 2 months since that data has been, you know, has been current, they've almost doubled the total number of content they have. Like, they're almost up to 30 at this point. So I feel like 10 million with half of them being active is pretty good, especially when you consider some of their biggest content, like The Banker came out in March. The Beastie Boys story came out in April. That was popular. Defending Jacob has apparently been like their most successful series since The Morning Show. That was April. They released more shows than any other previous month in April. So, and obviously the pandemic happened. So if you, you know, do some projections, some estimation, it's not hard to think they might be up to 15 million by now, right? With the extra 2 months on and the boost from all those different things. So I feel like that number is perfectly respectable. But obviously in the context of the Bloomberg report, it was kind of framed as like, oh, Apple's only got 10 million, so now they're like scrambling to buy this like library content. I don't necessarily buy that storyline as much, but it's cool to actually get some numbers because obviously Apple never tells you anymore, right? So, yeah. But I think 10 million's like okay. Everyone like freaks out about the 3 year thing, but just consider what Apple Music did, right? Apple Music, you get a 3 month free trial for anyone with an Apple ID, right? You can get 3 months, so that Apple has been given 3 months free to every single customer that's owned any single product since 2015 when Apple Music launched. And Apple Music is a service that has, you know, 50 million songs, 60 million songs. It's you know, you can essentially listen to any music you want for $9.99 a month. Whereas TV Plus comes in and you can watch, you know, Apple's originals, which, you know, even if they're the best shows on earth, and it's debatable, but some of them are very good, there's only like 15 of them at the moment. So it's like, if Apple TV Plus's subscriber numbers could equal what Apple Music did, I would count that as a roaring wit success, right? And Apple Music, I think they got to 50 million in 1 year, and now 5 years on, they're around like the 75 million mark. If Apple TV Plus can match that, I think they're, you know, off to the races. I think that's incredible for, you know, arguably a service that is way less compelling than what Apple Music could be, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and Apple TV Plus with original content is unique from its competitors in that you can pay for Netflix and Hulu and Disney Plus and Apple TV and get different stuff from each one. Whereas with Apple Music, it in many ways, it's the same content, a library of content as what Spotify has or other services.
Yeah, like
have.
Spotify and Apple Music are very homogenous, right? Yeah. Like, you're not going to subscribe to both of them. It's one or the other. Whereas mm-hmm. the TV market is like everyone trying to slice out their own.
Unless it's for like a unique podcast or something, as we'll discuss later maybe.
Yeah, but we can talk about that in a sec.
Yeah.
And then kind of a funny development is that in the morning, obviously, everyone's talking about the Bloomberg story of Apple's all, you know, going to find these 90s TV shows that can, you know, be fun or whatever. And then in the afternoon, Apple announced that they'd bought the rights to an upcoming brand new Tom Hanks film, which is called Greyhound. Now, this is a film that was actually developed and was originally going to be released theatrically by Sony. Mm-hmm. And it was meant to come out on like June the 12th or, you know, around that time frame. But obviously the pandemic means all the theaters are closed. There's no cinemas doing anything at the moment. And Sony's rescheduled most of their upcoming stuff to like 2021, 2022. But for whatever reason, they couldn't find a slot for this film to fit in, or they thought it wasn't going to be able to stack up between Disney's releases. So what they did instead is took it to the streaming services and said, do you want to buy this off of us? And apparently, according to the reports, Netflix and Apple bid. Apple outbid Netflix. And so for about $70 million, Apple TV Plus will be showing the film Greyhound soon. They haven't sent an official release out on TV Plus for everybody.
That's a good deal. If you get a free trial or pay $5 a month, you can watch a $70 million movie.
Yeah. Like, that's one of the funniest things about TV Plus is that it's probably one of the things that are most cost efficient as a customer to buy, because yeah. If you actually cost out how much Apple's spent on content to date, it's like $6 billion or something, you know, so in that range. And if you do $6 billion divided by $5 a month divided by 12, you need to get to like 60 million subscribers just for them to break even. So just on a raw, here's how much money I'm paying Apple and here's how much stuff Apple's giving me back, it's actually a pretty good deal, even though it doesn't feel like it when you look at, you know, just raw numbers. But anyway, so that's a pretty big blockbuster film that would have normally had a, you know, cinema run. and then bin on for 3 months later, go to like the standard video on demand stuff with like buying or renting, right? Which is kind of what we've seen happen with like the Trolls film, right? The Trolls World Tour. They did that instead of going to the cinemas in the current pandemic situation. They just took that straight to $20 rentals, right?
Yeah, which is something that probably could have existed when theaters, you know, were allowed to be open, and then even when they continue to be open in the future, there's been more that's done that. I think the Apple TV app has marketed this pretty heavily. The Scooby-Doo animated movie. I think it's in the same thing. There were a few other movies from the same thing. But this is, I mean, Tom Hanks is like, that's done nothing. It's, you know.
Yeah, Tom Hanks is a big name. Yeah. And this is different in that, you know, it will just be available if you subscribe to Apple TV Plus, you can watch the film, and it's exclusive to TV Plus.
I kind of like those things where it's like not like Apple bought an idea for a series, but they buy something that was going to exist somewhere else, you know, definitely, because some of the stuff, like, it might not have actually materialized. But if it's like done and ready to go, and you fill up your catalog that way, then it feels like a pretty good deal.
Yeah. And I think it just kind of talks to the wider situation of all these streaming services are like looking everywhere they can now for content to fill over the next year,
sure,
right? This films that theatrical films that are struggling with their business is one avenue for streamers to walk in and give them a nice payout, because apparently Sony has spent about $50 million on the film, and so they sold it for $70 million, so they made $20 million, so they're happy. And
some movies bomb that you wouldn't think would bomb, you know, like,
yeah, exactly. So and I think and you know, as soon as this news broke, obviously you get the skeptics on all sides of it or whatever. Someone said that Sony had been screening this movie as like a little test group since like 2 years ago, and it hadn't come out yet, which is sometimes a sign that it's not very good or it's having problems or whatever. So we'll wait and see when the film comes out.
Yeah.
I think Apple has shown that they're not stupid, that it was buying crap, right? So when if they spent $70 million on a film, it's probably all right, if you know what I mean.
And there is the Sony connection where you've got former Sony executives running TV Plus.
And Apple's worked with Sony on For All Mankind, like the production studio for For All Mankind and stuff. So they're obviously like big pals. And now, in the light of Apple buying all this library content, everyone's talking about acquisitions again. And one of the names that keeps cropping up is Sony Pictures. So we'll see how that fares. I don't think it's going to happen, but that's, you know, everyone loves to name things that Apple's going to buy. and so there's all these strategies that Apple's clearly adapting to the pandemic situation. One of the things they've done is actually commissioned a special episode of Mythic Quest, which is the video game comedy show. And so they're doing a kind of like the Mythic Quest crew do a Zoom call, and then, you know, the trials and funniness and the outcomes of that. So that should be pretty funny. When I saw the little trailer for that, it immediately reminded me of the Modern Family episode from, you know, 5 years ago.
That's where the idea of group FaceTime came from, yeah.
Yeah, and it actually turns out that one of the writers of that episode is actually helping to make this episode. She works on Mythic Quest already, so that's funny where the connection is. But I just thought that was, like, you know, really interesting, and we'll have to wait and see when Apple is ready to actually, like, say, now you can watch all this library content, right? And actually see their messaging of how they're going to shift from the all originals. In September they were calling it the only all original streaming service. So there's going to have to be some machinations around there to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, they can just bury it even more in the TV app and never promote it, but you can go and find it.
Please make it better.
Yeah.
We are sponsored this week by Bitrise. If you're an app developer, Bitrise offers iOS continuous integration and delivery that lets you build better applications faster. Bitrise includes a variety of iOS-specific solutions, from automatic code signing, support for the latest Xcode, virtual machines, and so much more. It offers more than 300 integrations to easily connect your processes and services that you need in your mobile development workflows. Setup becomes a breeze, and maintenance is drastically reduced, saving you both time and money. There's also out-of-the-box support for the major cross-platform frameworks that are used to create common iOS apps, as well as automatic iOS workflow configuration. Automate your tests for higher quality applications. And for continuous deployment, Bitrise saves you time by automating releases. You can automatically send your App Store signed builds to the store, deploy to third parties, and deploy to testing. Security is a priority of Bitrise, so you can sit back and relax knowing your data is safe. Bitrise is already used by the world's most productive mobile teams, so why not add it to your own development workflow today? Sign up for free at bitrise.io. That's bitrise.io. And learn more using the link in the show notes. Our thanks to Bitrise for supporting 9to5 Mac Happy Hour.
And then the last thing is kind of in the entertainment realm, which is that, you know, you're seeing some Apple podcasts or podcasts that are on Apple Podcasts and other podcast apps go exclusive to Spotify. And that's about the only example of somewhere that's buying a podcast and making them exclusive. And so it becomes an Apple story because these are top charting shows on Apple Podcasts. Will have a big effect for Apple. And the big thing there is Apple doesn't really monetize podcasts right now. And that they're kind of working on the same thing. So if you kind of argue about this over a philosophical level, like what is a podcast? It certainly seems like Apple is interested in doing the same thing, and why not? But the news this week is that the Joe Rogan Experience will go to Spotify exclusively. I think it's both this year. It's now available on Spotify. Next year, it's Spotify only. And then there'll be clips, and I think episodes released just later on other platforms. But
my understanding is that there might be clips on other platforms, but the actual show and the video version of the show is exclusive to Spotify from September.
Yeah.
So if you want to watch the Joe Rogan Experience podcast, which is either the top or the second most popular podcast in the world, you have to go to the Spotify app. And obviously it is an Apple story because, you know, Apple Music and Spotify are highly competitive, right? And like anything Spotify buys exclusively is another reason why someone might not be interested in Apple Music instead go to the Spotify ecosystem, even though this show is going to be free to watch, so you won't need a Spotify subscription to watch it. It will just be a free podcast. You just have to get to it.
You've argued in the past that made the point that it's better for Spotify to attract users spending time on free content like podcasts rather than licensed content like music.
Yeah, and obviously they have it to pay hundreds of millions for once. The Joe Rogan Experience.
Yeah.
But in general, most podcasts you listen to inside of Spotify is paying zero for, so they're making money off of it, right? Mm. But I can't imagine that Apple's just going to sit back and let, you know, these big name shows no longer be available in Apple Podcasts, which then also makes Apple Music less interesting at the same time because it's more reason to just buy Spotify instead, right? Surely Apple's going to have to play this game as well. They've got loads of money. They can buy, you know, big name podcasts. They can make original shows. Like, yes, it kind of sucks for the open ecosystem of podcasting, but business wise, I don't think that's going to stop Apple from doing it.
They could buy podcasts, include them in the podcast app for free as they always have been, but just not let them be exclusive somewhere else. No.
Well, we will pay you $10 million not to be exclusive.
Not to sell out.
Yeah. I think we've seen enough hires in the last year that clearly Apple is taking the podcast service way more seriously than they ever done before.
Yeah.
Right. They hired one of our former colleagues, Zach Kahn, to run PR at the end of last year. They hired that Nat Geographic person we talked about recently. Mm-hmm. They've hired a few other people. I think it's kind of like an easy thing to throw into like the supposed Apple Media bundle conglomerate service thing. Like, you can get some original podcasts as well to go along in the mix. So I feel like it's an inevitability. And I think what we saw with TV is that, you know, Apple's almost waited too long before they started making originals. And loads of other stuff had already started going to other places like Netflix or whatever. And so it'd be kind of stupid if they do the same thing again, where they sit on their laurels for 3 years, let Spotify buy like, you know, 10 huge shows, and then they finally get in, you know, into the game. Like, I feel like from a business perspective, it makes sense for them to start doing it sooner rather than later. I'm very curious to see what the podcast app will look like in iOS 14, because I feel like it's all kind of coming together for that to be.
Yeah, it could be some point in the 14 cycle that becomes a thing material. And one thing we know about podcasts and pandemics is podcasts are mostly pandemic proof unless you just run out of topics to discuss or something, you know, but you know, it doesn't have the TV Plus problem. Let's see. Yeah. So, something I want to mention this week is that I've tested a pre-release HomeKit doorbell that does not cost an arm and a leg and does not look like it's made for an apartment building or an office building or something. It's called the Yobi B3. I'm working on the review now. Hopefully by the time the podcast is out, it'll already been published and I'll have it linked in. But it's really good. Like it, you know how just released, I think this past week, the Logitech camera that is made for HomeKit.
The Circle View.
Yeah, yeah, it does it. And just like when you do HomeKit secure video, you lose the app. In the early days, at least, you lost access to that app, and it was just the HomeKit app that managed it. This is just like that. There's no, you know, bogus Yobi app to have to deal with. It's strictly like the home app is what you manage this thing with. And for better or worse, I mean, that's how it works. You know, the upside of that is it works with HomeKit, and that's not been a market that's been filled. You know, it costs $200. So it's like it's the same or less than like what a competitor would cost. And it works well. Like someone rings your doorbell and you have alerts on for that, then you get the snapshot picture come to your watch or your iPhone or your iPad or Mac of like that's who's at your doorbell. And it's instant. So I've used other ones in the past where it's like the person might be gone by the time the snapshot is captured and taken. So in this case, like doorbell contact, you know, snapshot taken. It's really reliable. There's usually a finger on the doorbell because it's that contact point that snaps the shot. And so the hardware itself is like, you know, it's not unattractive. It's a smart doorbell. You know, it's not a basic, it's not just a little tiny thing, but you know, it's got a camera and a big button on it. But I think it's pretty acceptable. The kind of challenge here is if you're only a HomeKit doorbell, like, and that's your app for interfacing with the doorbell, is that you can't offer any features that are outside of the HomeKit experience. So you're relying on Apple to offer features. And there's not HomeKit secure video in this doorbell yet. I ask, and they said that they're talking to Apple about if their chip can handle it or not. So there's a possibility that it could be like a better version that comes out. HomeKit secure video, I think, is pretty important for a doorbell. I think it's like made for that kind of situation because someone rings your doorbell, you don't just get the snapshot, you get like the whole interaction. You know, what do they say anything? Do they move around? Do they steal your package? You know, you can trigger like if it's just motion or if it's a pet or a car, those kind of things. You don't get any of that without HomeKit secure video. It's just HomeKit video. And the whole, you know, press a button, you get a doorbell thing. And because it's HomeKit, you know, and you're at the mercy of what Apple builds into HomeKit for doorbells, then you don't get all the things
that now is quite bare bones.
Yeah, it's been existing for several years. There's just not been a product that serves the market for less than several hundred dollars only in Europe. You can't do some things that like Ring can do. And I don't even need to go into like detail or even like research and like what can Ring do. All the things that you see on commercials for Ring, like you won't get that. But what you will get is someone rings your doorbell. And if you've got a HomeKit lock, you know, you have the control right there to unlock your door or talk back to the person. You can hear them, obviously. It works anywhere where HomeKit works. So if you've got HomeKit on your Mac, you know, you've got the Home app there, it works. If you have the Home Cam app from Aaron Pearce on your Apple TV, then that's one of the doorbell or one of the video sources you can have. And in that app, even on the iPhone and iPad, you can see all of your video streams live laid out. So that's really neat. And I was doing a Logitech Circle 2 inside the living room, but facing the front yard. It's like the makeshift front yard doorbell. And the backyard, which is fenced in, I just have it like wired in and someone could steal it, but no one can go back there. So I was getting like the indoor noise, the indoor environmental information and everything. And it was just like not perfect. And the picture is so much clearer now. I don't think the camera is as good of quality as what you see on the Logitech camera, but because it's outside and not through a window, it's way better. Yeah. And it's totally acceptable for what it is. So,
and it's coming out for purchase soon?
You can pre-order it. And I saw on Reddit before I received my review unit that I requested, someone saying that it was like that they had their pre-order was on the way. So, and I asked about that. I was like, so it seems like pre-order customers are getting theirs now. So that's the only thing too, is like availability is like a little bit weird where, they're still saying like, you know, you can pre-order, it seems like soon it will just be something you purchase and that gets shipped to you.
We're finally getting out like smoke and mirrors land. Being announced, but not actually shipping.
I think what they kind of hinted at is that there's pre-order shipping the next thing that'll happen is that they were a Kickstarter campaign, and so they've got to fulfill all of that, and then they'll be clear to say you purchase, we mail it to you like normal.
Got ya.
It only comes in this like, it's like kind of coppery gold. Like it's not gold. It's not rose gold. It's kind of bronzy, I guess. But it's a faceplate, so it could be changed in the future. I asked though, will that be the only option for now, or will they have options in the future? Like, I don't know, black, that could kind of go anywhere. Yeah. They said no plans for any different colors yet. So
they've learned from AirPods on that one.
Yeah, and then you know one of the things with the doorbell camera is that where it aims is very critical, and so a doorbell might just face into your street and not where the front of the door is, and so it accommodates that by having two different adapters, one to aim up or down based on placement, or left or right based on placement. The only thing is the adapter's white, so you've got your house and then a white adapter and then the black and like kind of gold colored doorbell. So
it sounds like they could do a slightly better color coordination.
yeah. But it's interesting because so they're using Yobi as the brand, B3 as the model. And I think they're a company called iBaby Labs that makes baby monitors and has like this whole business of baby monitors. And they just saw this as an opportunity for like, maybe the owners wanted this to be a thing. And then here it is. And they actually they beat Ring, which got bought by Amazon, but still said that they were committed to HomeKit like 2 years ago. August, which had a doorbell camera that they said that the CEO had a press release that was like, we included this chip because we knew this would be HomeKit compatible. And they just erased that from the internet. And there's like, that's it. So
yeah, the doorbell story of HomeKit is very long and winding.
Yeah, it's my I had some fun with the piece because it's like, you know, this is it can be dead simple and meet the minimum requirements, but like it's kind of binary. It's like, yes, it exists and you can buy it, or no, it doesn't, and there's not a whole lot of room between like, well, how is it though? It's like no, you don't really care how it is. It's finally here, like, you know. So, and it's not terrible.
It's just crazy. The whole HomeKit doorbell thing is just so crazy how it took so long for anything to materialize.
Yeah. I mean, and so the Robin Telecom stuff is what was there before, is like, you know, at least something fits the category. And that seems to be really, it's only for Europe. I got my hands on the compact version. It's huge. You have the huge version.
I've got the non-compact version. It's massive.
Yeah. And I was thinking I'll just put it in the back door because who cares what it looks like back there. And then I'll remove the HomeKit camera back there. That's just like positioned back there. And, you know, but it's powered by Ethernet or something. Like it's weird.
It's power over Ethernet type situation. It's clearly meant for businesses, right? Cause they have powered Ethernet everywhere.
They're yeah.
Through walls and stuff.
Yeah. I could probably pull it off, but I'm not in a hurry for that. So yeah,
if it was like smaller, it'd be a lot more compelling and not expensive, but it is somehow managed to be both big and pricey.
Yeah. With the BB3 for $200, it fit over my, I just removed the other doorbell, put it on the existing hardware. And then there's like the chime in the house where the sound comes from. And some of these things will have like systems where you can bring your own speaker system, like, or, you know, you're extended basically. I once lived where there was no doorbell and you could buy like a fake doorbell and a fake speaker, like to pull it off. This just fit over your existing stuff. So it rings my old doorbell chime, and it had like an adapter that needed, like if it needed to be powered, and I didn't end up needing that. So I was hoping to have that finished yesterday and then wrap it up today if I didn't get to it. But then, you know, I was contacting 100 different contacts over COVID contact tracing. So
nice.
A little bit behind on that.
For it.
Yeah. But by the time this comes out, it should be there. And then finally, there's a new Apple Watch activity challenge. What's up with that?
Yeah, so they missed Earth Day this year, which is a bit odd, but
there's a pandemic.
There was a pandemic. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah, that's the reason, I assume.
They've got I'll give them that one.
It's not like when they missed the Turkey 5K thing, and it was like, why they broke it? You know?
Yeah.
It was a pandemic.
Yeah, so they've got back on their feet, and they found a very similar event, which is for World Environment Day. They have scheduled the next Apple Watch Activity Challenge, and that's on June 5th. And obviously, they're not promoting you to go too far astray. So the challenge is to ensure that you stand up for at least 1 minute during 12 hours a day. So basically, if you can finish your stand ring, you can win the nice little badge And they've got some stickers as well.
Yeah, I saw a response to the first reply to this on Twitter. Like, I don't read comments, but I do read tweets. It was, what's the challenge in that? It's just to, you know, fill your sand ring. I think it's clever. I think it's very gentle, and that's all we need. It's cool that they've found a way to do this without saying, you know, go outside and run, or, you know, go, you know, all the things that they've done in the past. And they could definitely do one with, like, they did the yoga one, I think, at the beginning or sometime last year. That's repeatable. But it is sensitive. Like, it's even sensitive to ask someone to do a 5K on Thanksgiving. But, like, you know, that's at least a tradition for a lot of people. So with this...
And I'll say, it is a challenge to do your stand ring, at least in my house. Like, I do not fill my stand ring very often. Due to a combination of laziness and the fact that sometimes the Apple Watch doesn't actually register it, then you have to, like... If you're not watching it like a hawk, you sometimes get messed up or missing an hour here or there. I do not think I've closed many stand rings in the last year. Like, I do the move go every single day. I do the exercise go every day. Stand ring is elusive.
Well, so are you going to stand up for... What do they say? Stand up for the planet? It's on you, man.
I'll try. Yeah. I'll try. Yeah. At least it's a world challenge for a change. Like, I feel like it's been ages since there's one. They've all been US only recently.
That's right. And is you may have mentioned this, but is this a first for this type of event? So that
they've never done World Environment Day.
And what that means is that they can't recycle past artwork and medals. They can't just change the number of the year on it. There's something original about
potentially,
it.
Potentially, these might have been the Earth Day assets. When they missed Earth Day, they just recycled them for June instead.
But they're at least not last year's Earth Day assets.
No, like the stickers are new.
Yeah, so cool.
But that's cool.
June 5th, which would ordinarily be about WWDC. This time, that will be on, what is it, the 20th?
Second it starts.
22nd of June. Okay, so it's like the last Monday of the month. So you can kick off the month by standing up for the planet. That is awesome. Cool. Let's see what else we had to promote before we head away. I released a new episode of 9 to 5 Mac Watch Time this week with developer David Smith. He was on like 3 episodes ago, but he posted this thing on his 37th birthday where he deadlifted 300 pounds, and it was like of great significance to him because it was all part of this 3-year journey with the Apple Watch. He was awesome to come back the day after his birthday and discuss that. And it was one of those really good episodes. So check that out. And if I make watch time, with my Space Explorer project, we will see the launch of American astronauts from the U.S. for the first time since 2011 when the shuttle ended on Wednesday, May 27th at 4:30 p.m. Eastern time. And so that will be a big ordeal for the site, and can't wait to cover that. And it's also SpaceX's first time sending humans, so it's historic for a few different reasons. And and then the 9 to 5 Mac stuff just keeps coming. So that's all.
Not too long, and we'll be heading WWDC.
Yeah, it's exciting. That's exciting. So I'm looking forward to that. There's still like stuff kind of popping up too, like the Power Beats colors that we discussed. Mm-hmm. Now they're like visualized, so that seems to be that's going to be.
And we're still kind of waiting on like a Bloomberg report or something of like iOS 14 features, because Mark has one of them before.
Sure.
That hasn't come out yet. So we're kind of, there's going to be a lot of stuff in the next month or so ahead of the conference.
That's right. All right.
And the conference itself is going to be a whole different kettle of fish in so many ways.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ApolloZach and read my space news at spaceexplorer.com. Benjamin, you're on Twitter at...
BZMAO.
And you blog at?
BZMAO.
All right. You can also follow 9to5Mac on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. You can search, if you search in your podcast app for 9to5Mac, we also have a network of shows from 9to5Mac Daily, where you get a briefing of the news that day, to our sister sites with with Electric, 9to5Mac, or 9to5Toys, 9to5Google. We have like 10 podcasts in total, including another 9to5Mac podcast called Apple at Work.
And no Spotify exclusives.
Not yet. You know, if they offer, they've got to also include membership, because that's $100 million is nothing if they don't include, you know, free account. So you know, we'll see there. But Yep. Check out your podcast app for those shows, because even if, you know, it's not your interest, there's probably something out there for you. And we will be back next week. If you haven't yet, you can check out the video version of this podcast on YouTube at youtube.com/NFIMac and find our faces there in real motion, not real time, but real motion. And I think by the keynote, we want to do a live recording. So stay tuned for that.
Figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's easy to do because Electric, they do a live video podcast every week. So we'll just do what they do. But in the meantime, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. And we will be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.